Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is May 30th, 2017, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Sympathy for the Devil, and our guest skeptic is Dr. Andrew Worster. Andrew is a professor of emergency medicine at McMaster University, the home of evidence-based medicine, an associate member of the Department of Health Research Methods, Evidence, and Impact, creator of the best evidence in emergency medicine, and, as many of you know, my EBM mentor. Welcome to the SGEM, Andrew.
Thanks very much, Ken.
Well, this is a new series of SGEM Extras I am calling Legends of Emergency Medicine. And these episodes will highlight some of the pioneers and leaders of our specialty. Of course, they probably don't think they are legends, but I do. And I hope these episodes will give the younger generation of emergency physicians access to some of the superstars in our field via social media. Now, people are always asking me about the theme music, and if I pick the paper first or the music first. So to clarify, the paper is always picked first. However, in this case, I asked you, Andrew, to pick the theme music for this episode. So why did you pick Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones?
Yeah, for so many reasons. I'm a big Stones fan. I think that's one of the best hits. I love the bass line in it. But really, when it comes down to what I do in critical appraisal, the devil is in the details. And that's not always a bad thing. So there's some sympathy for the devil who creates the details.
Well, it's very much like the EBM answer you taught me. It all depends. And I guess what it depends on is the details of the paper, the patients and their values and expectations, and of course, the clinician's expertise. It is a privilege and honor to start with you, Andrew, for the first one of these Legends of Emergency Medicine podcasts. And the SGEMers already know a little bit about you because I've talked about you before. I gave a bio, but I'm wondering, can you give us some other non-medical interests that you have?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks very much for having me on this. As I said, I'm really flattered to be part of this. So non-medical. Okay, well, we talked about the bass line and Sympathy for the Devil. I play bass. Up until recently, I was playing bass in a jazz band, an all-physician jazz band, Billy Rubin and the Ketones. And when I can, I like to go scuba diving.
Scuba diving? Why scuba diving?
Again, so many reasons. It's a great way to get away, to literally escape. You know, down when you're 100 feet below sea level, there's no cell phone, no email, and the only pressure you feel is that two or three atmospheres of hydrostatic pressure around you.
So you don't have the pressure to come up with some pithy response on Twitter or Snapchat?
Exactly.
Well, that's a little bit more about you. How about we tell the SGEMers how we actually came to meeting?
Yeah, I love this story. I love telling the story. So when we started Beam back in 2005, we started it just as Ski Beam. So we held it at a ski resort in the Rockies in British Columbia. And you showed up, I think, was it like the second or third year we were doing it, I think. And it was a small crowd. And you would always come up with these challenging questions. So we would present a study, and the one that comes to mind is it was something to do with CAT scanning patients. And you raised your hand and you said, I don't have a CAT scan at my hospital. And we're all looking at one another, wondering what to think. And then another time it was, yeah, I don't have access to a lab after five at my hospital. And I can remember sitting around at lunchtime with the others and somebody saying, who is that guy who keeps saying that he doesn't have these things? And someone else said, yeah, Andrew, can't you just give his money back and ask him not to come back at all? Yeah, and, you know, and people are going on and saying, yeah, can you believe it? He doesn't even have a lab. I thought about it. As tempting as it was, I thought, Well, he's part of our target population, but I didn't know what proportion of our target population. You know, how many more Kenyans are there out there who are working in really small hospitals? And perhaps we need to change to provide better information to them. So instead of trying to answer all the questions that you came up with, I thought the next year I would invite you back as faculty. And of course, the others were quite shocked when I did that. But I thought, you know, can't beat them, join them. And as it turns out, it worked out great. It was a great partnership.
It almost sounds like keep your friends close, but keep your enemies closer. Is that sort of what it was?
Yeah, I guess to some degree, although I wouldn't classify you as an enemy. But in that case, yeah.
I do remember asking lots of questions, and I was blown away when you said, well, why didn't you come back as faculty? And I'm like, who am I? And why would you want me on board? But again, it's about being skeptical and critical of the literature and thinking about the external validity and how would I take the recent information that's been presented and then incorporate it into my practice so that my patients get the best care based on the best evidence being presented. And I have to tell you, you continually produce this amazing product out of Beam. I've just never, ever not been impressed with how wonderful these critical appraisals that you put out. But we did do that first conference, and I remember giving some talks. How did I do? What did you think of me when I got up there and started speaking for you?
Well, my first thought was, how much coffee does this guy drink in the morning? But you brought such a high level of energy with you, and you had changed everything completely. You rewrote the rules on how we were presenting, and it was entertaining, but at the same time, you're delivering the message in a different way. And I thought there was so much that we could all learn from that. And of course, you've gone on to become a great presenter. And I like to take part of the credit for that by putting you up front of our Beam audience.
Yeah, you gave me the opportunity, and I'll always be appreciative of you for that. But after writing some Beam reviews and teaching at the Beam conferences, I wanted to start a podcast. And the goal of the podcast was to cut the knowledge translation window down from over 10 years to less than 1 year using the power of social media. And I based the format on the critical appraisal skills that you taught me and the Beam checklist. And while you were very supportive, what other advice did you give me? Because there was something else coming up that you wanted to make sure that I had before I did this.
Yeah, so I really didn't understand social media all that well, but I thought you had an idea, you were going to run with it regardless, and I thought the best advice I could offer you was to up your game a bit with your critical appraisal skills, so your knowledge of clinical epidemiology. And it just so happened that I'd been invited to teach at Oxford, and so I said to you, why don't you come along and do this course? And perhaps you'll benefit from it.
Yeah, so I go over to Oxford, England. I'm going to be living in their residence there. It's a 4-day course. And who do I get assigned to be my leader? You. Now tell me, we haven't talked about this. Was that random or did you actually pick to be my leader for that group?
No, I had nothing to do with it. I arrived and was given my assignment just the same as you were. So I had nothing to say about it.
Well, that's the story you're sticking to. But, you know, I remember being there, and that's where that famous picture that I have of you holding up your statement, "It all depends," comes from. Do you remember that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at the photo right now, actually.
And then we went out to do a first pubcast for me to try out this sort of podcasting idea. And I thought, well, what better place to do a podcast than in a British pub in a social environment, and changed it into a pubcast.
You know, it was an interesting experience for me because I'd been watching you through the week. Each day you were getting up and presenting your idea, social media, using social media. And each time you presented, you had a little more information, a little more detail in it. So I was watching this thing, if you will, evolve. And again, I really didn't understand it. I wasn't sure what the implications were. But at the pub, when we went down to the pub and we're sitting there and we're actually doing the pubcast, I thought, okay, this is something new that's happening. This is a pioneer event. I'm not sure where it's going or what's going to happen, but something is happening now, and I'm part of it. Okay, maybe that was just the beer talking. I definitely felt that something was changing here, and I was witnessing it.
Well, I didn't know what was going to happen either, but over the last 5 years, the SGEM, it's grown into, I think, over 32,000 subscribers, and it's translated into 4 other languages, and it's really gone global. It's just been an amazing experience.
Yeah, amazing. Who would have thought it, right? When we were back at Oxford, sitting there in that pub, and if someone had said to us, given us those statistics, I think we would have just laughed and had another beer.
I think I would have had another beer with you too. I want to get on to the formal part of this SGEM Extra. Legends of Emergency Medicine. And I was going to ask you 5 things to get your thoughts as a leader, as an innovator, and a disruptor of emergency medicine, okay?
Yep.
Okay, so the first question I really wanted to focus in on is, what's the biggest positive change? I'm a glasses half full kind of guy. So what's the biggest positive change you've seen in emergency medicine through your career?
Okay, well, keeping in mind that I've been practicing emergency medicine for more than 25 years, so I've seen a number of things happen. I would say without doubt, the most obvious is the internet and now more recently social media. So these two have allowed for the dissemination of information at speeds beyond imagination in the previous decade. And you recently demonstrated on social media how you can use that to challenge a false claim of efficacy. You brought a number of people together, each of them speaking up about the concerns they had about this. And so I think, you know, this was a bold pioneer move, something, as far as I know, that hadn't been done on social media before, which, again, 10 years ago, really wouldn't have been possible to bring all of those voices together to challenge something.
That was the Don't Believe the Hype Vitamin C podcast?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, and so the second question I wanted to ask you about is, what's the biggest negative change you've seen in emergency medicine? Because it can't all be good.
Okay, so, you know, the low-lying fruit here would be the introduction of predatory journals. But I'm really not convinced that they have any impact on practice. So I would say again, the internet and more recently, social media. So as Spider-Man would say, with great power comes great responsibility. Whenever you're putting something out there for everyone to read, you have to be cognizant of the adoption of what you're suggesting. Is this going to benefit patients? Is this going to harm patients? Do I know what I'm talking about? And I find right now on social media, there's so much competition for attention that the signal is often lost in the noise and in the medium itself.
So I'd like to get back to something positive then, and that's question 3. What contribution to emergency medicine are you most proud of? And I'm going to say so far, because I still think you've got more to contribute. So what's the thing you're proud of most that you've contributed?
I don't think in terms of, you know, being proud of something I've done. I think I've been an advocate of evidence-based emergency medicine for a long time. And so anything that I've done that has effectively delivered the message, I think I would be proud of. But that could be as small as, you know, talking to a small group of physicians, to publishing something, to something as big as, Beam, creating Beam.
Well, we've mentioned actually Beam a few times. I think we better explain it a bit more. So what is best evidence in emergency medicine?
So Beam is an international not-for-profit emergency medicine knowledge translation project. This was created by myself and other emergency physicians for emergency physicians to find, filter, critique, and disseminate the latest research.
What motivated you to start Beam?
I think this developed over a long time. I always felt like I was behind on the information curve. You know, I would hear my colleagues citing studies that I'd never heard of. They'd cite these as evidence for practice change. And in my ignorance, I was too embarrassed to ask about these studies. And what I was always hoping for, that someone would come up with a single resource that I could go to that would have all of the most clinically relevant and potentially practice-changing studies for me to go through. And then I thought, well, surely other emergency physicians must feel the same way. So I looked at what was out there, and I had some concerns about the quality of the studies that some groups were promoting. And I also had concerns about the ties that the promoters had to industry. So the other side of that was I didn't completely buy into the evidence-based medicine philosophy of teaching everyone to critically appraise the literature, because the truth is that most physicians don't have the time or the interest in doing that. And critical appraisal, like any skill, takes a lot of practice to get good at. So yeah, it was all of these little things that were pushing me forward.
So why don't you take us behind that curtain and tell us the process? What's the magic? What are you doing in the BEAM process?
Okay, so this is the wizard behind the curtain. So we have the ability to track well over 100 medical journals looking for any studies that are related to emergency medicine. We developed a tool that allowed us to take just the title of the study and the conclusions and send that out to emergency physicians around the world and ask them to rate the clinical relevance of that study from a scale of 1 to 7, 7 being highest. So we conducted reliability and validity studies on that, and there was nothing like it at the time. So that's our BEAM rater score. So the articles that score the highest, we actually critically appraise in-house. So it's not just one person doing the critical appraisal, it's actually multiple people working independently. In this way, we have multiple experts looking at the study from different angles, and we minimize bias and optimize the expert opinion that goes into it.
So what do you have for a vision or a mission of BEAM?
So the BEAM mission is to provide emergency physicians with the best clinical evidence to optimize patient care. The BEAM vision is to be the most valid, reliable, and unbiased global source of current clinically relevant patient-centered research for emergency physicians.
Well, if people haven't been to a BEAM conference and are not familiar with the product, I really encourage them to check one out. So do you have any courses coming up that people could sign up for?
We do. We just finished in New York last week, but in September we'll be in Niagara Falls, Canada. Beautiful place to be, especially if you like wine. Week later, we'll be in Montreal. We call that one Kabim. That one will be delivered mostly in French. Then in October, we're in Stockholm, Sweden, which I'm really excited about. And then right after that, we're in Helsinki, Finland. And that will be our last one for the year. In January, we start up again with Sunbeam at Sun Peaks Resorts in British Columbia.
So that would be Ski Beam, right?
That is Ski Beam. And then we're at Sunbeam in Costa Rica in February.
Sounds great. So the fourth question I wanted to ask you about is, what advice would you give to someone who comes to you and says, I'm interested in going into emergency medicine?
Yeah, I would tell them without a doubt, this is a great specialty. It's exciting. There are just so many opportunities. And I think if you come into this with open eyes and see those opportunities, you can make a great career. You can customize your career. And what I tell many of my residents and graduate students is find an area, find something in emergency medicine that you're really passionate about and create a niche for yourself. And by doing that, you'll actually become the expert. And you'll create your own career, just as you and I have done, Ken. You'll create your own career. And I think you can contribute more to medicine, emergency medicine, and your patients' well-being than just by seeing patients all the time.
Just hearing you answer that, it made me reflect actually upon what's happened with me. And you gave me the space, the opportunity, the stage to do that. And I found my niche. I really, really enjoy doing knowledge translation using social media. And it's something that I'm passionate about, and I'm certainly not regretting it.
Right. So the other side of that, there's the 1% inspiration, but you still have to put in, you know, the 99% perspiration. So you know, you can't count the number of hours that you've put in over the past 5 years developing what you've done. But then again, it's been a labor of love. So yeah,
it's been absolutely worth it. Absolutely worth it. And especially for the relationships that I've made around the world because of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I would really encourage everyone, you know, not just those who are new to emergency medicine, but even those people who've been practicing emergency medicine for a while, you can still do this. You can find that niche, that particular area of interest that you have, become the expert in that, and it will open all sorts of doors for you.
So the last question, the fifth question that I wanted to ask you, requires you to put on your future goggles. Yeah. And I want you to look forward into the future and think 10 years from now, where do you think emergency medicine will be? What do you picture it becoming?
Yeah, I think our friend and colleague Chris Carpenter is way ahead of, on the curve on this one. Much of our time will be spent looking after older adults with complex medical and social problems. If you're not good at that already, you need to become good at it. I think we'll also be relying more on decision support systems, which may not necessarily be a bad thing, but it all depends on what information is put into those support systems. But regardless of what happens, I would advise people to be open to new ideas and look at the challenges as opportunities for you to improve your own skills, to improve emergency medicine, and of course, most importantly, improve patients' lives.
I like how you slip something in there, and you probably didn't notice it because you do it so often. You slipped in there, it all depends.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to discuss? I should end, I guess, with some open-ended question. So is there anything else that you wanted the SGM listeners to know about, something that you're doing, something that you're interested in?
Yeah, if I can just have 30 seconds for a rant. What we're seeing now, well, what we've been seeing all along, but it's happening now, is introduction of newer diagnostic technologies. And typically what happens as a new diagnostic test comes out, a study is done that reports the performance characteristics as the benchmark for adoption and implementation. So there'll be many new diagnostic tests coming down the pipeline, and studies will report their high sensitivity or specificity or predictive value. And based on these numbers, the tests will be adopted and implemented into clinical decisions. So I want you to think about something. We would never adopt a new medication based solely on its absorption characteristics or its bioavailability. What we want to see is that the medication actually benefits patients. So why don't we hold the same standards to diagnostic tests? So for the sake of our patients, we need to raise the bar. We need to start treating diagnostic tests as the interventions that they are and hold these to the same research standards to which we hold therapeutic interventions. We need to demonstrate improved patient outcomes through RCTs, randomized control trials, for these tests. And then we can say, yes, now it's worthy of adoption.
Is that the end of the rant? Is it over?
That's the end of the rant.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think we're all on the same page that we want the best care for patients based on the best evidence. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the SGM and sharing your story and your advice.
Ken, thanks so much for having me again. I'm really flattered. And again, kudos to you for doing such a great job.
Well, as a legend of emergency medicine, can you give the SGM tagline?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.